John Murphy Show is on the air.
Mario Williams has him around the waist and he drops him. Super Mario gets in on the sack party.
Yeah! Let's go, Buffalo! Come on, baby!
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Ball into the end zone. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Aaron Williams made a leaping interception in the end zone.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. A weird show coming up tonight. Comedian Jim Florentine joins us at 7:30. He's appearing in Buffalo tonight. He's got some thoughts on the Bills, the NFL, and his favorite team, the Dolphins. Coming up at 8 o'clock, author Nathan Frederick is booked his Draft Days. He takes a look at the draft with a look at some of the characters around it. And Dr. C. Keith Harrison, a professor from Florida, joins us to talk about the NFL's female fans and what they're looking for at the game.
This place is pandemonium.
Finds a crease up the middle, dodges the man at the five, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Yeah, kind of a weird show, but that's okay. Glad to be doing it for you tonight. Good evening, welcome. Wednesday night, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're still 3 weeks and a day away from the NFL draft, and we're not going to dig down into the prospects today. We'll give that a rest for a day. More of that coming up tomorrow night, but we are going to talk about the draft. Author Nathan Frederick joins us at 8 o'clock. His book is Draft Days. He basically spent the entire 2012 draft day analyzing every pick, but beyond that, Nathan Frederick looked at the characters involved in the draft, the principles, and his book is about what makes the draft so popular. That's coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. 8:30. What makes the NFL so popular among women sports fans? Dr. C. Keith Harrison of Central Florida University is going to join us at 8:30 to talk about that. He did a study commissioned by the NFL, the player engagement folks at the NFL, Troy Vincent's group, and we'll get his thoughts on what they found out in the study about NFL female fans, in particular the fans who come to the games. What do they want at the games besides a win, obviously? And coming up at the bottom of this hour, comedian Jim Florentine will join us. You remember him from Crank Yankers, maybe. You may have seen him on VH1 Classic on the show, that metal show. And he'll be joining us at 7:30 tonight. He's appearing in Buffalo tonight at Helium Comedy Club. But he's a big sports fan. He won an Emmy for his work on Inside the NFL on HBO not too long ago. He's got lots of thoughts about the NFL, about the Miami Dolphins, even the Buffalo Bills. He's going to join us at 7:30 tonight and provide a little levity tonight. But we want to hear from you, as we always do on the show tonight. Phone lines open, as they always are, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. The news of the NFL today, the biggest news of the NFL, deals with the New York Jets and the signing of running back Chris Johnson, the former Tennessee Titan, a guy who six straight years has run for 1,000 or more yards. He obviously had a 2,000-yard rushing season not too many years ago. Maybe he's got enough left in the tank to make a difference for the Jets. He signed with the Jets today. And that brings up the question to us, now with Chris Johnson with the Jets, who's got the best rushing attack in the AFC East? You know the lineup, the Bills with C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson, their primary running backs. The Jets now with Chris Johnson. They bring back Chris Ivory and Bilal Powell from a year ago. The Dolphins add Knowshon Moreno to the mix along with Lamar Miller. And who else they got? Marcus Thigpen and Daniel Thomas. The Patriots, they lost the guy who torched the Bills last year, LeGarrette Blount. They still have Stephen Ridley and Shane Vereen. Who's got the best rushing attack in the AFC East? And does it matter if you've got Tom Brady or a quarterback that you like? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. I think the Bills, based on what we saw last year, have the best rushing attack in the division, but the Jets have closed the gap today, you would think, with Chris Johnson. And I know Johnson's got a lot of miles on him, but I still think he is a valuable performer and still has a bit of dynamic potential in him to make a difference in the games. I think the gap closed a little bit today with the Jets signing of Chris Johnson. Let us know what you think. The phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The Bills, of course, second in the NFL in rushing yards last year, number one in the NFL by a fairly wide margin in rushing attempts. The Jets were a strong rushing team last year. They were in the top 10. The Patriots in the top 10 in rushing last year, believe it or not. The Dolphins, I believe, were 26 last year. And the Jets ran the ball a lot. They did adhere to Rex Ryan's ground and pound theory last year. They didn't run the ball quite as often as the Bills, but they were close. And if the Jets are going to run the ball this year, maybe they won't as much, depending on who's at quarterback, right? Will it be Geno Smith? Will it be Michael Vick? We'll see. But if they're going to run the ball as much as they did a year ago and start handing off to Chris Johnson as opposed to Chris Ivory or Bilal Powell, that could make a difference in the way the New York Jets attack. What do you think of the Jets, what they've done? They've added three pieces to their offense, which are intriguing, I think. Chris Johnson, one of them. I mean, I would anticipate he's got something left. So that's one. They've added Michael Vick, who could wind up playing quarterback for the New York Jets. And, of course, they added Eric Decker, who many of us, me included, believe was a product of Peyton Manning throwing the ball there. But what do you think? Who's got the best rushing attack right now in the AFC East with the Jets' addition of Chris Johnson? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And if you missed that news, it is to Chris Johnson, signed with the New York Jets a week after being released by the Tennessee Titans. It's a two-year deal worth up to $9 million. The base value of the deal, according to NFL insider Adam Schefter of ESPN, $8 million, and it includes another $1 million in incentives. He was released April 4th by the Titans. There was not much interest on the open market. He visited with only one team, the Jets. That happened yesterday, and he signed today. Chris Johnson has had some good moments even last year when he had a very big play against the Buffalo Bills, or that was 2 years ago, a very big play against the Buffalo Bills at Ralph Wilson Stadium.
Snap, and the handoff goes to Chris Johnson, finds a crease, left side has room at the 30. Johnson at the 40 at midfield. He is gone. 30-yard line, 25-20, turns around and looks, and he goes into the end zone for the touchdown. Are you kidding me? 83-yard touchdown run by Chris Johnson.
Chris Johnson, he still can bring it from time to time. He ran for 1,000 yards in each of his six seasons in the NFL, 2,006 yards in 2009. His health may be a bit of a question. He had surgery in late January to repair a torn meniscus in his right knee, and he just started running again about a month ago. Last year, he averaged a career-low 3.9 yards per carry. So there are those red flags about Chris Johnson, the knee injury, the meniscus tear, and the production last year, which seemed to drop off quite substantially. Chris Johnson talked to the NFL Network today, and he talked to the New York Jets. He talked to the New York Jets' Eric Allen, and he talked about his decision joining the New York Jets and what went into it.
A lot of things went into it. You know, I had a couple different teams who I was talking to, and just after sitting down with Woody and Rex and those guys making me feel comfortable and making me feel at home, I left here yesterday and thought about it and I slept on it. And when I woke up this morning, I knew it was going to be the Jets.
But you never left the area, like you said. You said other teams were interested in you as well. What was last night like for you after you had originally visited with the team?
Well, it was pretty good. You know, all teams, it don't really require a visit. But, you know, it was some thought into it. And just at the end of the day, I just felt more comfortable here and just felt like this was the right situation.
Chris Johnson, the New York Jets' new running back, signed a contract today. So he joins an offense that was not, you know, lacked in big playmakers in the last year, maybe the last 2 years. An offense that was held back, you would think, by the rookie quarterback Geno Smith a year ago. An offense that may get a boost now with the addition of Michael Vick if he plays and Eric Decker catching passes. Chris Johnson talked to Eric Allen of NewYorkJets.com about how he might be able to fit in with that Jets offense.
A lot of people like to say he liked to pass the ball, but just from talking to him and Rex, he's a guy that liked to run the ball also. And I just think I'm going to fit in it very well. Just sitting down with him yesterday and all the talks that we had, I think we sat down for over 30 minutes, and just him making me feel comfortable in his offense and him doing the right things.
You're joining the Jets rush offense that finished sixth overall in the National Football League. What about that offensive line as far as the guys you're looking at up front, specifically some guys you got to know very well over the years, I imagine, at your Pro Bowl stops, and that's DeBergishaw, Ferguson, Nick Mangold?
Yeah, those guys, those are good guys up front, and that was something big in my decision when I became a free agent. The next spot that I was going to land at was a team that was up and coming and being a contender every year, and also a team that had a good offensive line and with a good offense coordinator who was going to give me a chance to put me in the right position to help my team win.
Chris Johnson signed by the New York Jets today, and sounds like he's looking forward to fitting in. But we want to hear from you. Who's the best rush offense now in the AFC East? The Buffalo Bills led the division in rushing yardage a year ago and were number two in the NFL. But what do you think? Are they still with the Jets with that addition? Have the Jets passed them? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Some of the tweets that have come in. Let's see. Bob Malugaluga tweets in, until one of them finishes ahead of Buffalo in rushing, then the Bills are the best with CJ, Fred, and Booby. Nick tweets in, the addition of Chris Johnson just adds more pressure to Buffalo. The pass run defense has been bad. If they can't get big wide receiver, they need linebacker. And here's an interesting point I thought made too, about the Jim Schwartz. Here it is, Bills' number one fan. Jim Schwartz's reputation for great run defense will definitely be put to the test in Jets versus Bills. Good point. I mean, that's why that's the difference between what Jim Schwartz brings to this defense as coordinator and maybe what the Bills had with Mike Patton. Jim Schwartz has consistently produced good, strong run defenses, and it will be tested, you would think. Ivory and Johnson, here's Matt Williams' tweet. Ivory and Johnson, the Jets' two running backs, have produced consistently, if not spectacularly. Jackson, Fred Jackson's been a workhorse, Spiller a disappointment. Okay. Maybe that's one way to look at it. David Guy tweets in, the Buffalo Bills have the best running back attack in the AFC East. Are you kidding me? No, I'm not kidding. I think it's up for debate now with Chris Johnson. I do think Chris Johnson has something left in the tank. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Chris Johnson might have a big bounce back here. 2,006 yards, not necessarily, but I think he's a pretty good running back who has demonstrated that if you give him the ball, maybe not, you know, the average of 290 carries per season that he was with Tennessee, but if you get him the ball, he's a home run hitter. Alex Clowden tweets in, easily the Bills. Daylon Dabney tweets in, the Bills do. I would say Chris Johnson, but he's only a speed guy, and he's lazy. C.J. Spiller is better all around and still hungry. Easily the Bills, not close, tweets in Garth Blakely. A lot of people believe that, Bills fans at least that are listening to this, believe that the Bills still have the best rushing attack in the NFL, and I do too, but I do think the addition of Chris Johnson to the New York Jets roster changes the equation enough to make you consider it. The Bills are really going to have to be on point when it comes to run defense this year, and they have not been for the last few years. It's a new defense this year. It's a new defensive coordinator, and I'm sure a renewed focus on stopping the run. But that's been a problem on a consistent basis for the last few years. With all the good the Buffalo defense did last year with takeaways, with sacks, they were not strong against the run, and the Patriots torched them in that last game. You look, it's Bills and Jets we're talking about, but what about the other rushing attacks in the AFC East? The Dolphins added Knowshon Moreno to their group of Lamar Miller and Daniel Thomas and Marcus Thigpen. They were 26th in the NFL in rushing last year. I don't know that Knowshon Moreno changes them that much. I think the Dolphins are going to have problems all over the offensive side of the ball. Patriots got the big game from LeGarrette Blount against the Bills in that season finale in the rainstorm at Foxborough, which I do think skewed the stats a little bit. And Blount had 189 yards in the finale last year, a couple of touchdowns. He, of course, goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So he's not there. Shane Vereen had a fairly big game against the Bills in the opener last year, 101 yards. And Ridley is a reliable back, if not a great back. As I said, the Patriots were top 10 in rushing last year, but I don't know that there's anybody there that scares me as far as the rushing attack. I think the Patriots offense, the focal point remains Tom Brady. They ran it more last year than they have in the past, but I still think the focal point remains Tom Brady. So if you look at the AFC East, which rushing attack is number one right now? I'm staying with the Bills, who were number one last year. They were also number one in the NFL in rushing attempts, but I think the Jets have closed the gap, perhaps significantly today, with the addition of Chris Johnson, signed to a contract by the New York Jets today, the free agent. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. We can take your tweets as well at John Murphy Show. A couple of other notes around the NFL. The New York Giants have a new quarterback to bring to camp. Whether he stays on the roster remains to be seen, but Josh Freeman, former first-round draft pick of the Tampa Bay Bucks, has agreed to a one-year contract with the New York Giants. He worked out for him yesterday. He also visited the Chicago Bears. Freeman on the roster now, competing for the number two job on the Giants roster with Curtis Painter, the former Indianapolis Colt, and Ryan Nassib. the former Syracuse quarterback. Of course, all of this precipitated by the ankle surgery, the arthroscopic surgery on Eli Manning's left ankle. That surgery happened last week. The word is that Eli Manning is going to be able to run in about 6 weeks, which shouldn't take him out of too much significant preseason time. Eli's got 151 consecutive starts, the longest active streak in the NFL now with London Fletcher's retirement, third longest by a quarterback in NFL history. Josh Freeman, who got off to a great start in his NFL career and then tapered off, he was cut by the Bucs last October, signed by the Minnesota Vikings, started one game, that game against the Giants on Monday Night Football, did not look good, and he was released. He was a free agent, and now the former first-round pick is a backup with the New York Giants. With the Bucs, Freeman, 56 starts, his best year 2010 when he started the whole season, 25 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He's struggled since then, Josh Freeman has. Now he gets to sign with the New York Giants and compete with those other two, Curtis Painter and Ryan Nassib, for the number 2 job. Wonder how that's going to shake out with the Giants. We were talking about this in the office today. You recall just about a year ago at this time, right before the draft, Ryan Nassib was many people's choice as the quarterback the Bills should go for in the 2013 draft. They didn't. And Nassib lasted, what, until the fourth round and the Giants finally picked him up? I think the Bills made a good choice there, going with E.J. Manuel. We're going to talk more about that also a little bit later on. But it's not even close when you look at what Manuel did, even with his limited time, 10 starts last year, and the fact that Nassib didn't really make an impact at all with the New York Giants. All right, the Rob Gronkowski update, the Amherst native with the New England Patriots. The orthopedist, Dr. James Andrews, says Gronkowski is, quote, right where he should be in his recovery from reconstructive knee surgery. But he is still not going to rush back from the torn ACL and MCL he suffered late last season. According to one report, Gronkowski plans to, quote, take his time and then take more time to make sure that he's ready to go. Gronkowski may open the season on the physically unable to perform list. New England may be even looking for a tight end in the draft in a couple of weeks. Rob Gronkowski, though, right where he should be, according to the doctor, in his recovery from reconstructive knee surgery. And whatever happened to, in the category of whatever happened to, how about Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco? He is in Montreal. Did you know this? He is on the field with the Montreal Alouettes of the CFL today yesterday, the start of their 3-day minicamp, and he's probably going to stay with them when their season starts for real in June. Chad Ocho Cinco hasn't played in an NFL game in a couple of years now. Last appeared in a game during the 2011 season when New England went to camp with the Dolphins in 2012. His contract was terminated one day after he was charged with misdemeanor domestic battery. And Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, is in Montreal trying to keep the thing going with the Montreal Alouettes of the Canadian Football League. Chad Ocho Cinco, he was a major star not that long ago. He's fallen pretty far. He's now in Montreal. All right, so the topic tonight we're talking about on the phone, the running attacks in the AFC East. Who's got the best one? The Bills with the Fred Jackson, C.J. Spiller combo. The New York Jets now with the addition of Chris Johnson to go with Chris Ivory and Bilal Powell. Think about the 1-2 punch, by the way. Chris Johnson gets outside with the quickness. Chris Ivory can pound it between the tackles. The Dolphins with Knowshon Moreno, Lamar Miller, Daniel Thomas, Marcus Thigpen. The Patriots with Stephen Ridley, Shane Vereen. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Who's got the strongest running attack in the AFC East? 803-0550, the number to call. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. A couple of tweets. Keith Berta tweets in, the Patriots do, not the Bills. Spiller not on every down back. Well, he doesn't have to be. Sean Franklin tweets in, I believe the Bills have an upper hand, but we've always struggled against Chris Johnson. Hopefully not this year. And Dan Barron tweets in, Patriots first, Bills second, Jets third, Miami fourth. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The best running attack in the AFC East. Here is Mark in New Jersey. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, John. I'm going to sound like a homer, but I'm going to say the Bills do for several reasons. I think you look at Fred Jackson. He's an anomaly, but I think he's the best all-purpose back in terms of third down blocking. I think he's the best receiving back, and he's just a grinder. I think CJ, he's still in his prime, home run hitter. Jets. Chris Johnson's on the downside of his career, and no player they've ever brought in has done well under Rex Ryan. They've gotten worse on offense. Patriots are built around their quarterback, and in Miami, they added Knowshon Moreno. They had Lamar Smith, and they didn't even run him when they had him. Now they have another running back along with Daniel Thomas, and the Bills are probably going to draft another running back the first few rounds and add an offensive lineman. So I think they're going to be the best running attack in the AFC.
Let me ask you this, Mark. How important is it to have a good running attack in today's NFL?
It's so underrated, especially in Buffalo, because if you're going to play games late in the year that are meaningful, and the wind is whipping around there, and you better be able to run the ball. And I know it probably pains Doug Marrone to watch the Patriots run on them the way they did in that rainy weather in Foxborough. So you have to be able to run the ball, especially in Buffalo.
All right. Thanks, Mark. I think you're right about that. The weather plays a factor. And, yeah, all you need to do is look at the finale from last year for an illustration of how important it is late in the season to have a strong running game. The Patriots were running all over the Bills in that game in Foxborough, December 29th. But there's this, too. The Bills ran the ball, as most of our listeners know, ran the ball more than anybody else in the NFL last year, more often than anybody else. And part of the reason was an effort to protect the rookie quarterback, E.J. Manuel, to keep the pressure off him. They may be able to, with the second year now for E.J., may be able to take some of that off of the running game and loosen up E.J. a little bit. In fact, I hope they do. I hope that they're able to take a few more chances. I want them to have a strong running game. I'm thinking they're probably going to be the best running attack in the division again. But I do think that they need to open things up a little bit more offensively and take some of the reins off E.J. Manuel. I'm hoping that that happens this year. We got into a discussion a little bit last night about E.J., as a matter of fact, and we had a tweet. I can't find it, but somebody tweeted in something about the effect of it was about drafting quarterbacks. And somebody tweeted in, it's sickening how you spew the company line about E.J. We need another quarterback. Well, first of all, if you're really making you sick, you should probably turn the radio off. Number two, that's not company line. All I'm doing is telling you, and what I said last night was the way the Bills decision makers, Marrone and Whaley, have said what they've said all along is that they are all in with E.J., that they're not interested in drafting a quarterback to compete with E.J. You can disagree with that all you want. You can. But that's what they're saying. So I wouldn't look for an early quarterback in this year's draft. If you are, you're probably going to be disappointed, I would think. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to take a break with a little bit of comedy from a guest, Jim Florentine, who is a comedian noted for his work on Crank Yankers from several years ago. He's on the VH1 Classic show now, that metal show. He's doing a comedy tour around the United States. He used to be on HBO's Inside the NFL and did a number of great video pieces for them. Got a lot of thoughts on the Bills, the NFL in particular, and where the league is headed these days. It's coming up next, Jim Florentine. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight here in Buffalo, appearing tonight at Helium Comedy Club, downtown Buffalo, Mississippi Street, is comedian Jim Florentine, and we're happy to have him on the show here tonight because he is a big sports fan and a big observer of professional sports. Jim, good to be with you. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
You do a lot of sports themes in your stand-up act, and throughout your career, you've talked a lot about sports, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm a big, pro football and pro baseball fan and stuff, and any kind of, topics that are going on in sports, I can usually have a decent take on.
I found out that you're a native of New Jersey, but you've been essentially a lifelong Miami Dolphins fan. How did that happen, Jim?
Yeah, I don't like, I never liked any of the local teams for some reason. I don't know, everybody in school when I was a little kid liked them, and I just decided to rebel against them. So, like, Miami in football and San Francisco Giants in baseball. But I never had a problem with the Bills. Like, I have more of a problem with the Jets. The Jets are my arch nemesis.
Really? Living in Jersey.
Bills of Miami as a kid, those Kelly and Marino games were classics and stuff. So, I never hated the Bills. And the Patriots, the Patriots in that division, no one's winning that division until Brady and Belichick are gone. So I don't even consider them competition.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people here feel the same way. But a lot of people here watch your team, the Dolphins, really struggle against the Bills in the early 90s. I mean, Dan Marino had some of his worst moments in the stadium across the parking lot here, Jim.
Well, what happened was, Jim Kelly used to call Tom Olivadotti, who was the Miami defense coordinator at the time, the Bills' 12th man, because he would play 20 yards off the ball at the cornerbacks and not blitz Kelly and rush three slow white guys. And have the cornerbacks playing 20. You couldn't even see him on a TV screen. And Kelly would just go march right down the field.
Yeah.
He's like, this guy never makes adjustments. They talked about that afterward, when Kelly's career ended, that Olivadotti was the Bills' 12th man. So Marino had no defense. Those games were great, though.
Yeah, the Dolphins had one great moment in the stadium here in Orchard Park. I don't remember when Lewis Oliver picked off Kelly and ran it back like 104 yards, and he pranced into the end zone. It was probably the greatest moment in Lewis Oliver's NFL career.
Yeah, definitely. And then I remember Brian Cox giving you guys the fingers.
Yeah.
That was at Buffalo, yeah.
How about that?
Those were classic games, man. Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed. And then when Thurman Thomas went to Miami for that year, I'm like, wait a minute, this can't be happening.
It didn't fit, did it? We've talked to Thurman about that on the show. It didn't work.
No, but, you know, he just wanted to play another year. I mean, he only played, I think, 3 games before he got hurt and he was out. But I could see him being a little, you know, the Bills just kind of threw him to the side. He's like, hey, I want to play one more year. You should give me that.
You know, Jim, I talked to Thurman about that, and I don't know if you remember when Thurman was with the Bills, when he'd come out on the field down there in Miami, he would deliberately, you know, an hour before kickoff, go in the end zone in Miami and taunt the fans. He wanted those Dolphins fans to be against him, and they happily obliged.
That was a huge rivalry at the time, man. There was such good games. Was it the championship game, the Dolphins, the Bills? The Bills just destroyed Miami. I remember that one. That was a rough one.
How can we get that rivalry back, Jim?
We got to get Belichick and friggin' Brady out of the AFC East. The day Brady retires is the day Belichick's retiring. There's no way he's staying because they're going 4-12 for the next 5 years.
I hope you're right. We're with the comedian Jim Florentine appearing tonight at Helium Comedy Club. How did Dan Marino become your favorite player?
Well, you know, just, you know, from being a Miami fan, and then all of a sudden you finally had a quarterback.
You know,
and he was just, you know, he didn't win a Super Bowl and all that stuff, but, you know. It was just great watching him every week, man, and just firing that ball down the field and just, you know, he was just great to watch. And we haven't had a quarterback in Miami since, and you guys have had problems with quarterbacks in Buffalo, too.
Not a believer in Ryan Tannehill?
I don't know. I'm on the fence. This is the year he's got to do it. It's his third year. I'm 50-50 with him, and everybody kind of is. So if he doesn't do it this year, you need another quarterback. But that's the thing in this league. It's the same with the Bills. If you guys don't have a franchise quarterback, you're not going to win the Super Bowl. You need a great quarterback, and they build a team around it.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, your team, the Dolphins, had their season last year sort of derailed by the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin dust-up. What do you make of that?
It was way overblown. A bunch of guys in the locker room, that's what people do. They bust each other's balls. That's what guys do. You're a team. You just, you know, Jonathan Martin said just as bad things back to Richie Incognito if you look at all the text messaging, but for some reason – you know, Jonathan Martin's a baby. That's the bottom line. And what happened was his mom got involved because his mom took his cell phone, little mama's boy, and went through it and just picked out the one where he used the N-word and said, look what Richie Incognito did to my son. And that's when the whole thing blew up.
And blown out of proportion, you think?
Totally blown out of proportion. That happens on every team. Jonathan Martin, all he had to do was at one point just say, dude, you're going over the line. Please stop. That's all he had to do. He never did that. Richie, that's why he blindsided Incognito. Richie's like, the guy was my best friend. He, you know, the guy's obviously got mental problems. He won't get off the couch. I was the guy getting him, like, come on, let's go out. Let's have a few beers. Let's get out of your apartment. He was Jonathan Martin is a complete bust. He's a second-round bust, and he couldn't deal with it. So he had to blame it on Richie Incognito.
And you know, Jim, there's a move. They talked about it at the owners' meetings a month ago about instituting a rule for a 15-yard penalty for use of the N-word on the field. Do you think this whole thing, in your opinion, has gone too far?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's just that word, no other word. You know, there's half Asian players in the league, there's Spanish players, but just the N-word. So if you use an Asian slur, you're not going to get a penalty. The Asian guy could go complain to the ref, did you hear what he called me? He's like, yeah, but that's not the N-word. Go back in the huddle.
You're
Spanish
right.
Guy. You see what he said? Yeah, but that's not the N-word. Sorry. Maybe next year. Just go back in the huddle.
Yeah. Where does all that come from?
It comes from the NFL trying to appeal to everybody. It comes from the NFL when they started with fantasy football. They wanted nerds to watch the game. And then with the halftime shows, you know, with the Beyoncés and the Madonnas, they wanted women to watch. And this year, that Bruno Sammartino guy, whatever the hell his name is, what is that, Michael Jackson impersonator, they want chicks to watch the game. And when you get nerds and girls in, then you open the game. When the View is talking about the NFL for 15 minutes to open a show, you know that you're going to get any little thing that goes on, any human resource issue, whatever, is going to be a huge topic, and they're going to have to deal with it. And that's why they're at the point where they're banning the N-word on the field, when most black guys, that's how they greet each other, by saying the N-word.
Do you think the game is for testosterone-fueled young males?
No, I mean, look, hockey doesn't try to appeal to women. Hockey doesn't put a pink puck on the ice. So women can go, oh, look, it's pink. They like breast cancer awareness. They know. Look, we got our niche audience. Let's just leave it like that. You know, if it got out that hockey has an enforcer that goes on the ice just to beat the crap out of somebody, imagine if the View found out about that and they did a 10-minute discussion on it. How could that's bullying? How is it? That's an example for the kids. He just goes beat people up, and then all of a sudden the NFL, the NHL, be like, all right, we can't have an enforcer anymore. He can't come on the ice just to fight people. It's a joke.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But the NFL tries to get every last penny out of everybody, and that's why they're in this situation.
Yeah,
that's why the bullying thing. It doesn't happen in hockey. Doesn't, you know, a lot of sports. They just know. Look at UFC. UFC doesn't have guys wearing pink gloves for a month.
You're right. Comedian Jim Florentine, our guest. You mentioned a moment ago about nerds and fantasy football. Jim, we do a regular weekly segment during the season on our show about fantasy football. And in the interest of full disclosure, my eyes glaze over. I don't get the appeal of fantasy football. Do you?
Look, my whole thing is, and I have arguments, guys, if you're a real football fan, if you're a passionate Buffalo Bills fan, and you play fantasy football and you got Ryan Tannehill or Tom Brady on your team, you're not a real fan. If you have to root for them, I want Tom Brady to throw four touchdowns, but I don't want him to win the game, then you compromise being a fan. It's for the casual fan that just, you know, wants to watch the game. But don't call yourself a real fan if you're playing fantasy football. I don't care. It's fun. It's gambling. It's not fun. And you want to gamble, just go to the casino.
I've seen your act. You don't even like being around fantasy football players, right?
Well, I don't like going to a sports bar and guys with laptops out. Eating appetizers and khakis. I don't know what that is. Doesn't make sense to me.
What's wrong with khakis?
You know, I'm standing there trying to watch the Dolphins on a you know, with no volume on the TV, and these nerds are running over. Who just scored that touchdown? I think I have him on my team. I'm like, get out of here. Go away.
Yeah, that always bothered me. And people say, I need so and so to score one more touchdown or something. They're rooting for the wrong things, aren't they?
If you're a Bills fan and you have the Jets defense that week, how are you a fan? You want the Jets defense to do well. They're in your division. You want to beat the Jets. You hate the Jets, but you have them on your team. But that's your, and you're going to get points.
Yeah, doesn't make sense. Hey Jim, you talked about how much you like Dan Marino. I understand your least favorite player all time was future Hall of Famer Brett Favre. Is that right?
Yeah, but the guy's going to be a Hall of Famer, obviously, but he was a complete drama queen. At 29 years old, I don't know if I want to play anymore. Yeah, okay, yeah, we're believing that. For 8 years in a row, he just didn't want to go to training camp. Just say it. Look, I don't want to go to training camp.
And
he's a big baby. He was the biggest drama queen. He was like the Lindsay Lohan of the NFL.
Yeah, you're right. You won an Emmy for
everybody just gave him a pass because it was like, well, that's. Remember the time Brett Favre wouldn't come out of the game when he was playing for the Vikings?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a game they were getting blown out in the second quarter. They already had the division locked up, and he waved the coach off. He goes, no, I'm staying on the field. Imagine if T.O. would have done that when he was with the Bills.
Yeah. Speaking of T.O. They would
have thrown him off the team.
Yeah,
it was just every sportscast like, that's just Brett being Brett. He's a competitor. Really? Yeah. So anyone just go, I'm not coming off the field. I'm staying here.
Yeah, that was John Madden who deified him, basically.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Madden loved him and stuff. It's like, I don't know. He just annoyed the crap out of me.
Speaking of T.O., Terrell Owens, I remember a spot you did when you were on Inside the NFL on HBO where you actually had the nerve to wear a Terrell Owens Eagles jersey in the Giants stadium parking lot tailgating. That turned out pretty interesting, didn't it?
Yeah. What I did is I went with a hidden camera. I did a bit for the Inside the NFL where I went to Giants stadium and I was wearing a T.O. jersey when he was on the Eagles. And just going up to all these Giant fans that are tailgating. Like, hey, you guys got a beer? You want to play football? You want to play catch with the football? And like, are you kidding me? Well, I'm like, what, dude? With that jersey? I'm like, what? You don't like this jersey? Like, no, we don't like it. We want to burn it. I'm like, all right, I'll take it off. And I would take it off. I had a cowboy one underneath that. They're like, that's worse. And then I would have a redskin underneath that.
That was great stuff. Hey, as you probably know, Jim, here in Buffalo, a lot of Bills fans are focused on who the next owner of the team might be. Donald Trump has reportedly expressed interest in that. How do you think that might work out, the Donald owning the Bills?
That's a disaster. You don't want that as a Bills fan. You want a guy behind the scenes. Donald Trump says crazy stuff every day. He's going to be in the news. And then I hear Bon Jovi's interested. It's like, really? Well, what's next? Brett Michaels from Poison going to put a bid in? The guys from Warren are going to try to raise some money to get it? Is Striper going to buy the team and your Bills are going to be in yellow and black?
Hope that doesn't happen. Jim, we appreciate you coming on the show with us. Continued good luck on your tour. We can watch you still. You're still on VH1, that metal show, right?
Yeah, that metal show every Saturday night at 11 o'clock.
We'll be looking for that. Thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight, Jim.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Jim Florentine, a comedian. You remember him maybe from Crank Anchors, the character Special Ed, and Bobby Fletcher. And as he said, he's on that metal show on VH1 Classic. He's appearing tonight at Helium Comedy Club here in Buffalo, Mississippi Street, downtown. Jim Florentine, our guest. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Pretty funny guy, Jim Florentine. Thanks to him for joining us. He's appearing tonight at Helium Comedy Club, downtown Buffalo, right around the corner from First Niagara Center. Jim Florentine. It was good. I thought it was pretty funny stuff about political correctness. I don't necessarily agree with what he said, but might be onto something there. And stuff about Brett Favre, very, very funny. Thanks to him for joining us. Obviously, keeping an eye on the NFL, Jim Florentine. Thanks to him for joining us tonight on the show. We started the night and continue talking about the running back situation in the AFC East. You've heard by now the Jets have added Chris Johnson to their roster to go with Chris Ivory. And do they rival the Bills in terms of the best rushing attack in the division now? The Bills led the league in rushing attempts last year, second in rushing yardage. And who's got the best rushing attack now in the AFC East? Give us a call if you have the answer to that, if you have an opinion on that. 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. A couple of tweets. Dan tweets in, the Bills have the best rushing attack. Ivory sucks, he says, and Chris Johnson is washed out. Robbie Perry tweets in, it has to be Freddie and Spiller, but honestly, probably not by much. I think that's where I'm coming down on it. I think the Bills still have the number one rushing attack in the AFC East with Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller. However, I do think the Jets closed the gap with the addition today of a guy who I consider to be a very, very dynamic running back, even coming off a kind of a drop-off year for Chris Johnson. Knee injury held him back, 3.9 yards per carry. I get all that, but I think he's a dangerous runner. He probably won't get the workload he got in Tennessee the last few years. Won't need to because they can have Ivory run between the tackles. I think he's a difference maker when he's healthy, and I think it could make a difference for the New York Jets. If you have thoughts on that, we'll take your calls throughout the rest of the night. I want to remind you, as you look ahead to the draft, which is now 3 weeks from tomorrow night, make sure you continually check in on BuffaloBills.com every day. Chris Brown and I have a draft preview, the 2014 countdown to the draft brought to you by Time Warner Cable. And today there's a video segment with North Carolina tight end Eric Ebron. I did that one, wrote it, tracked it, talked to Eric Ebron at the Combine back in late February. So you want to check that out. Eric Ebron is up right now on BuffaloBills.com. You can go back in the archives, too. Sammy Watkins was up yesterday, the talented running back from Clemson. We've had them all, and we'll continue to have them all. Jadeveon Clowney was our guy on Monday. All the top prospects in the draft every day profiled with video highlights up right now at BuffaloBills.com. So make sure you check out that. Again, today it is Eric Ebron, the tight end that a lot of people are interested in around Bills Nation. Speaking of the draft, the Bills and M&T Bank have launched Predict the Picks, the draft contest. One fan will get an exclusive meet and greet with the guy who becomes the Bills' eventual first-round draft pick. Go to BuffaloBills.com/predictthepicks, and you'll be asked a series of 10 multiple-choice questions about the draft. Contest runs through May 7th, the day before the draft, so you got 3 weeks from today to do it. The Bills with the 9th overall pick, as you know. Fans who correctly answer 80% or more of the questions will go into the contest grand prize entered into that, and the grand prize a meet and greet with the Bills' first pick in the draft. Once the entry form is completed and submitted, you'll get a copy of your answer so you can track your progress while following the draft live. It's the Bills M&T Bank Predict the Picks 2014 NFL Draft Contest. You can log on right now to BuffaloBills.com/predictthepicks and make your selections for the 2014 Bills draft. At stake, a meet and greet with the first overall draft pick. I remember just last year doing this. The folks came in who won the contest and got a chance right outside here in the media room to meet and greet with E.J. Manuel. The winner of this contest is going to get a chance to do that this year. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour. When we return, speaking of the draft, a book that is out there called Draft Days by Nathan Frederick, who did an in-depth study of the 2012 NFL draft and an in-depth study of what the draft means in pro football these days. That's coming up next at the top of the hour. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
time is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
Let's go sometime.
There you go. Hold hands. Let's go. Check it out.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. And we're just about 3 weeks away from the NFL draft. And if you listen to the show, you know we talk about the draft a lot, the prospects this year for 2014, the draft order, team needs, et cetera, et cetera. We continue to do that over the next few weeks, but we do want to take a step back, a little bit of a step back tonight. A couple of years ago, an author named Nathan Frederick wrote a book, Draft Days, D-A-Z-E, One Man's Quest to Process the Coverage, Characters, and Every Single Pick of the NFL Draft. And author Nathan Frederick joins us on the line right now. Nate, good to be with you. Thanks for coming on the show with us tonight.
No problem. Great to be on, John. Thanks for having me.
Where did this project come from in 2012 when you decided to lock in on the 2012 draft? Where did the idea come from?
I'd always liked the draft growing up, big fan of it. I was one of those degenerates who would spend, a long time on the couch watching those, 15-minute picks and things like that. And I thought to dig deeper and see, who I might be able to touch base with and really just try to cover it from a kind of a broad perspective, get into the history and, talk to as many people, players, agents, et cetera, as I could. And it was, it was one of those things, the more you got into it, the more interesting it became. There was a lot of things I didn't know, even being a fan of the draft, that I learned throughout the process. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and what you've done, it seems to me, in the book is gone through the draft, the 2012 draft, a couple of years ago, pick by pick. You give us little capsules of them, of each of the picks. But you also kind of introduce us to other characters, peripheral characters around the draft, correct?
Yeah, I tried to touch base with, some of the big personalities, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, and then Ozzie Newsome and some players, Reggie Kelly, and, some lesser-known guys as well. But, the draft has so many moving parts that you can't tell that story without, talking to an agent like Ralph Sindrich or talking to, players and agents and other things. So I really wanted to cover it from as many perspectives as possible.
You know what, Nate? I've described the draft this way to people over the last couple of years, especially now that the draft is on primetime television, on essentially network television. It is reality TV. In fact, it may be the best of all the reality TV shows, isn't it?
It certainly, has the reality TV element. One of ESPN's vice presidents of programming described it that way, too. He said it's the ultimate reality television event. You have, players with millions of dollars hanging on, where they're getting drafted and when they're getting drafted. So it's phenomenal on many levels.
Our guest is author Nathan Frederick. His book is Draft Days. It's available on Amazon.com. And you talk about your interest in the draft going way back when. Were you around, Nate, when I was, I want to say back in the early 80s, when the draft was held weekdays? I think it was Tuesdays, Wednesdays, around midday. And I actually had friends. It was kind of a cult following, but I knew friends who would take off work or not go to school that day so they could sit around and pay attention to the NFL draft. You remember that?
I was born in 1981, so I was around for that part,
yeah.
But not really aware of it. But that was one of the fun stories that I heard, was that even before it became this big event, widely televised, widely discussed and written about, that there were people who were following it, way back. People would, take days off work. People would go to the hotels and follow what they could. And another thing that I thought was really interesting in the mid-'80s was when the USFL was competing. And so they had the round-the-clock draft in order to prevent the USFL from poaching players during an intermission. So that was another one of the draft stories that I didn't know about that I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I forgot about that, but it did. There was no break. It wasn't a three-day event. They'd start and they wouldn't end until the draft was over. That had to be kind of a grueling event back then, the draft, I would think, huh?
It was a marathon. And some of the funny stories, unfortunately, didn't make it to print, but Todd McShay was talking about how, Mel Kiper in the early days of the draft was like a machine. He wouldn't have to go to the bathroom. He wouldn't eat much, because it's not set up quite, or it wasn't set up quite for television like it is today, with the breaks and first round on one day and, second, third round on another day and so on. It was more intense, and none more intense than, that year when they had the round-the-clock draft.
And then what do you think happened to the NFL draft to to make the transition from sort of a cult following, you know, an obscure middle of the week thing, and then to a primetime television show the way it is now? What do you think contributed to that transformation?
I think the biggest contributing factor is probably the popularity of the NFL itself. The NFL continues to dominate the sports landscape, and I think anything involving the NFL was going to generate a lot of interest and things like that. But the draft itself, with personalities and the time of year when you're really, you know, craving some sort of football and starving for some sort of football, it was all these things working together. Obviously, ESPN, you know, the growth of that contributed to it as well. But a number of factors kind of snowballed, but I would say the most important factor is just that it's an NFL event.
On the line,
you gather a bunch of NFL personalities, you know, on any given day, and it's going to turn on television sets.
Yeah, it does. Nathan Frederick is our guest. His book is Draft Days, D-A-Z-E. It's available at Amazon.com. Let's talk for a second about the ESPN component, Nate, and in particular, Mel Kiper Jr., who sort of exploded out of nowhere to become, in draft terms anyway, a household name. Where did he come from? How did he get this status as the number one draft guru?
Well, the interesting thing, and there were some people before him that didn't get quite as much credit. Joel Buschbaum, for the hardcore draft fans, you know, is kind of like the godfather of it all. But ESPN really helped Mel. But the interesting thing about his story is that Mel was pretty close to being in the Baltimore Colts front office. But he had made some headway with Ernie Accorsi there. And just as he was getting ready to get brought on into their scouting department with the Colts, you know, pretty much up and left Baltimore. So that kind of, you know, pushed Mel in another direction. He got lined up with ESPN. And then as, you know, ESPN kind of blossomed as a network, you know, they took on more and more of the draft when they realized an interest was there. And Mel's ties to ESPN and the draft itself kind of grew together, so to speak.
Talk about a guy developing his own niche. I mean, that might be the most a sterling example of a guy who found a vacancy and moved in there and made it his own. Nobody really did that on a national basis. You mentioned Joel Buschbaum, but nobody had the kind of profile that Mel Kiper had, and he created the job on his own, didn't he?
Yeah, and he gets a lot of credit for, you know, for being a fan of the draft. He, you know, when I interviewed him, he talked about he was a visionary of sorts in that he knew that that was the best way to improve your team. You know, trades, you know, could do things here and there, but free agency wasn't around. So if you wanted to get better, you know, you had to do it through the draft. And he kind of identified that before everybody else did. And, he pushed the draft in a positive direction. And he, you know, he is one of the forerunners of, you know, the draft and making it what it is today, where 40 million plus will be watching it over the course of those 3 days.
Nate, Mel Kiper is also sort of a lightning rod, isn't he? And I think back to, it had to be, what, 15 years ago now with the famous on-air exchange with, I think it was Bill Tobin, the Colts general manager, after Mel criticized a pick. Do you remember that incident?
That one in particular, I'm a little fuzzy on. But, yeah, I think anybody who's got strong opinions, you know, that's one of the great things about Mel is he has opinions on, you know, a litany of players. He's researched and studied a lot of those guys, so he's going to have an opinion on a guy coming out of Harvard that might get picked in the sixth round or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's sort of a lightning rod. You know, people, obviously personnel types are very invested in the selections that they make, so any criticism from anybody, whoever it might be, could draw, you know, some of that ire. But I think that again, is what makes the draft exciting. It's, you know, hearing a pick and, you know, maybe fans of that team aren't thrilled with that pick, or maybe the commentators aren't thrilled with that pick, and it creates controversy and drama, and again, the draft becomes more interesting because of that.
And now, of course, Mel Kiper Jr. shares the ESPN spotlight with Todd McShay. He has for the last several years. Where did Todd McShay come from? What are his credentials?
Todd actually was a football player at the University of Richmond, and then his career kind of got cut short by injury, and he was able to kind of align himself with an organization called War Room as kind of early scouting service. And same kind of thing, that scouting service was eventually bought by ESPN. McShay stayed on, and obviously with ESPN, you know, heavily tied to football, they were always looking for more voices and more content, and McShay has been able to serve as another sounding board for, you know, draft prospects and draft topics. So those two work really well together. They, you know, they get along very well, but they're not afraid to exchange their opinions or kind of banter back and forth. So, again, you know, with television, any kind of controversy can make things more compelling. And I think those guys both have strong opinions because they've done the legwork. But then they're not afraid to disagree. McShay said, you know, it's kind of like with one of your friends. You might debate and argue at times and, you know, really try to, you know, force your opinion onto the other guy. But at the end of the day, you're friends. So they have a very good relationship.
Yeah, and I have to say I was really gratified to read that in your book, Nate, because, you know, you would think that Mel Kiper, who basically had developed the job, developed the brand, you wondered if he would welcome Todd McShay. In fact, he welcomed him with open arms when McShay got started at ESPN, huh?
And that's one of the interesting things about Mel, and I think that's probably why he's helped to build the draft into what it is he never felt, at least I never got the opinion that he felt like anyone was impinging on his territory. So his attitude has always been, you know, to try to bring as many people into the tent, so to speak, as possible, and try to get people talking about the draft and interested in the draft as much as possible, whoever they might be, even somebody who might be working at his own network and eventually maybe going to take over for him. But that's one of Mel's strengths, and there's that chapter in my book about Play the Draft, in which two guys have this idea for a fantasy game based on the draft, and they pitched it to Mel, and he kind of ran with that too, and was willing to let them use his name and his likeness and his kind of draft expertise in a way to add to the game. So that was kind of interesting. But that's a testament to his personality.
The book is called Draft Days. It's available at Amazon.com. The author is Nathan Frederick. He's on the line with us right now. The book goes through the 2012 draft, but moreover, it goes through some of the people associated with the draft. And you managed to talk to one of my favorites, a good friend of our show, Nate, Gil Brandt, who some people call the godfather of the NFL draft. He's a remarkable resource of information, isn't he?
He is amazing. He is. It's like having an encyclopedia that has a voice and can tell you all the stories. He was very fascinating because he was able to take me back to the early days of the draft, you know, in Philadelphia ballrooms when, you know, people would actually take, you know, the team personnel would actually take rolls of quarters to the ballroom because they would need them to use the phones and contact prospects and things like that. It used to be back then. Some of Gil's stories were that the players themselves wouldn't even know they were drafted right away. It wasn't, you know, happening live on television, so they might get a telegram or, you know, the information that they were drafted a couple days after the fact. So that was really interesting. And he was able to provide that contrast of where the draft was at one point to where it is now today.
Yeah, and Gil didn't just talk about it. I mean, he's on Sirius Radio now, Sirius NFL Radio, and he's on NFL.com. But he really is credited with kind of bringing the NFL into the computer age when it came to assembling draft and scouting information, right?
That was one of his biggest contributions, yeah, when he was with the Dallas Cowboys, I believe. He tried to computerize a lot of the facets of, you know, information collecting and gathering, and that kind of thing did help modernize, you know, elements of the draft process, as well as when, you know, when you're getting a centralized bank of information. And obviously the Dallas Cowboys did very well with, you know, the drafts in the late 80s and early 90s. And some of that is probably because they were a little bit ahead of other organizations in regard to, you know, some of those processes.
And the computerization takes us all the way forward to present times, and you profile a guy in your book, Tony Viliotti of Pittsburgh, who's done really statistical, analytical studies of NFL draft, what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, his research was really interesting because, you know, baseball gets a lot of credit and it's pretty heavily tied to the analytics, but you don't see a lot of evidence with that happening in football. And, you know, Tony was just a guy who was, you know, much like a lot of other people, just very interested in the draft. But he had a bit of a numbers background, and he, you know, tried to figure out, can you predict, you know, certain things in the draft? Can you predict, you know, when you should take a certain player or a certain position? And some of his research has shown that. You know, in a lot of cases, I believe his research has shown that it makes sense to try to take a quarterback early. Because if, you know, the mid-round quarterbacks don't usually end up being, you know, the Pro Bowl-type players or the high-quality caliber quarterbacks. So a lot of his research is really interesting, just trying to analyze the trends when you should take a certain player in a certain position. And it's a lot less sophisticated than you might expect. It's just a rolling database of a lot of information on Excel spreadsheets that he's recorded and kept and studied.
And Nate, and one more person that profiled in your book, and not the last person you talk about, but Ozzie Newsome. You describe him as, you know, obviously the Ravens general manager, is one of those rare people who's been on both ends of that draft day phone call. That makes him not unique, but pretty rare, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's extremely interesting because he did have that expertise and that experience as a player, waiting for that phone to ring, getting frustrated that some people were picked ahead of him who he might have been better than or thought he was better than. So he is very cognizant of that, I think, when he actually makes the phone calls for the Ravens. And I think he really gets to enjoy that moment when he gets to inform a player that, yes, indeed, you have been drafted by the Baltimore Ravens, because I think he's lived it. He knows what it's like to have that anxiety building and building and building and building, and then the joy that you finally experience when you are drafted.
Nate Frederick, our guest. His book is Draft Days, D-A-Z-E, Draft Days, One Man's Quest to Process the NFL Draft. And in your quest to process the draft, Nate, you actually took the Wunderlich test, the famous Wunderlich test, huh?
I did. I wasn't quite former Bills quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick, who got a 48, but I was in the low 30s, which I was happy with. But it was really interesting to finally get my hands on the test that, you know, gets so much attention, because you kind of want to know where you stack up. And I was kind of middling, I guess, as far as quarterbacks go. You know, a good quarterback number is usually in the high 20s or low 30s, and I was right around there. So I don't know where that would put me as far as a NFL quarterback, but it was at least a respectable enough score that, you know, I don't have to get laughed at or anything like that.
Didn't you write that even the guy, is it Mr. Wunderlich, who developed the test, is not sure that it should be used to evaluate NFL prospects? Did you?
No, I think he actually thinks it is a standardized measure.
Okay.
That is worthy. You know, I don't think he thinks that's the be-all, end-all, but because it's so quick, it really is, you know, it's essentially a 12-minute test, that it's worth using. It gives you a quick grasp of a player's cognitive ability in a limited, you know, amount of time, and it is standardized, but like anything, there are going to be outliers, so that alone is not what you want to base your draft picks on.
Hey, Nate, here in Buffalo, we live in a football town that shares the sports spotlight from time to time with NHL hockey. But people should know that when it comes to television programs for this time of year and in 3 weeks, that'll be the number one sports thing on TV that week and probably for the entire month of May, wouldn't you think?
What's interesting is, yes, the draft itself, you know, will beat playoff games in other sports. You know, it'll beat NHL playoff games. It'll beat NBA playoff games. So it is amazing when you think about it that there is no live sports action, that it is so compelling and so widely viewed. But, yeah, it is an absolute sports giant in the spring calendar.
Where do you see the draft going, Nate? I mean, they've moved it to primetime TV 4 years ago. They've sped up the process with fewer time between picks. What's next for the draft? I mean, what are we talking about? I mean, it's like watching election coverage now on television, and I can't imagine what the networks would do next to make it better, but I'm sure they've got some ideas.
I think you're going to continue to see a lot of social media integration with the draft, which is kind of interesting. As far as the movement of the date, I'm not sure about that. I wasn't really expecting it to move into May, but I imagine it could be shifted a little bit yet as far as when exactly the draft falls. So I'm not sure there, but I do think you're going to continue to see, with, you know, Twitter and the online social media elements and comments and feedback and other things, I think they'll continue, the networks will try to tie some of that in so that it is really a multimedia event, so that you're not just watching the draft, but you also might be visiting a website while you're watching the draft and doing other things.
Last thing for you, Nate, your beloved Cincinnati Bengals, your team. How have they done in the draft recently, and what are you looking for them to do in a couple of weeks?
They've really done a lot better in recent years. The 90s, you know, it's surprising I was interested in the draft because it was always a torturous event as a Bengals fan. The one that sticks out of my mind is when the rumor was that the New Orleans Saints, when they were coveting Ricky Williams, offered their entire draft board for the Bengals. The Bengals turned it down, drafted Akili Smith. We all saw how that turned out. I expect them this year to, they could definitely use a defensive back cornerback. They could also use some offensive line help. Marvin Lewis and, you know, some of his coaches, I think, get a lot of credit because they've really turned around the Bengals' history as far as the draft goes. They've taken a lot more known commodities as far as players go from, you know, power teams and power conferences, and I think that's really helped them. And I'm also actually anxious to see what your Bills do. I think, you know, since you guys are in Buffalo, I think there's a very good likelihood that the Bills will take a look at a tight end, or they at least should. Either in round one or round two, I think, you know, the Colts in the 2012 draft kind of gave the young quarterback blueprint. They went very heavy on offense after drafting Andrew Luck. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bills kind of continue that even though they took Manuel last year. I think you could see some, you know, receivers and tight ends taken pretty highly in this draft.
I hope you're right. Nathan, thank you very much for being on with us. The book is outstanding. We thank you for coming on the show tonight to talk about it.
Thank you very much, guys. Anytime. Appreciate it.
Okay, Nathan Frederick is the author's name. The book is Draft Days, D-A-Z-E Days, One Man's Quest to Process the Coverage, Characters, and Every Single Pick of the NFL Draft. He deals with the 2012 draft, but mostly he deals with the people we talked about, Mel Kiper Jr., Todd McShay, Gil Brandt, Tony Viliotti, a number of them, Ozzie Newsome. It's a very good book, Draft Days by Nathan Frederick. We've got more to come, including a look at female fans in the NFL with a professor from Central Florida who's done a study for the league about female fans, what they're looking for, what they'd like to see in the NFL. That's coming up next on the show. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Nathan Frederick. His book is Draft Days. You can find it on Amazon.com. Kind of a look at the draft in the big picture. Tomorrow night, we're going to talk about this year's draft with Dan Shaka of Our Lad's Guide to the NFL Draft. Bills receiver Brandon Kaufman scheduled to join us on the show tomorrow night as well. Well, the NFL never stops in its research into its market, into who its fans are and how they can better serve those fans. And there's an effort recently by the NFL's Diversity and Inclusion Department to figure out what female fans are looking for when they come to the game. On the line with us right now is Dr. C. Keith Harrison. He is associate professor at the University of Central Florida, and he is the principal investigator and lead researcher for the paper submitted to the NFL, examining the NFL game day experience of female spectators. Dr. Harrison, how are you? Thanks for coming on the show with us tonight.
John, it's an honor and a privilege. And hello out there, Bills Nation.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Hey, I got it. Here's a little anecdote I want to tell you. I was in the supermarket a week or so ago, and a woman, you know, probably my age, middle age, I guess, came up to me and said, "I listen to your show every night." And I have to say, Dr. Harrison, it kind of surprised me. When we do this show, I never think about women listening to the show. I guess I should think again about that, huh?
Absolutely, and I'll roll through some stats why we should all respect and embrace them and be inclusive. Women in an average American household, according to a study by Harvard and Bridget Brennan's book, excellent book, Why She Buys, shows us the fact that 85% of disposable income decisions are made by women in the household. The second thing is two other stats around late 2000s. It was found that 45% of Super Bowl watchers were women. And then recently, the last year or two, the NFL released a stat that 51% of live-action attendees are the female population. So I had the great opportunity, you know, fittingly or full circle, working with Troy Vincent at the NFL the last 2 years on a myriad of projects, and this is one of them.
So you're saying... Yeah, we saw Troy a couple of weeks ago at the owners meeting. You're telling me 51% of the overall NFL in-stadium attendance is women?
Approximately, that's what they released, yes.
That surprises me, Dr. Harrison. Does that surprise you?
No, I've been collecting data the last 2 years with the female population. And when people, you know, the women, quite naturally, as you connect with them in terms of our passions for sport and research and their identity at games, they would ask me about that 45% stat, and I could just tell from being a researcher after 22 years, John, I thought it was closer to 50, and when they released the stat, it actually confirmed what I thought. The women we surveyed were over five different games, two on the West Coast, three in the state of Florida, and I can give you the major findings. They're very interesting.
Yeah, I want to hear that, but do you have any idea how that 51% figure might compare to other sports, other professional sports?
Absolutely, because I'm studying the female demographic in those sports. NASCAR is 40% women. Major League Baseball is 40%. NBA is between 35 and 40. The X Factor, and I'm attending UFC this weekend at Amway Arena in Orlando, and my students are collecting data at some of the local restaurants for those that watch it. UFC Ultimate Fighting Championship, John, is almost at 50% already, and the sport's only been around 20 years.
Wow. That surprises me, though. I got to say that. And let me ask you this. In your study, and I've looked over it quickly, you talk about female spectators and influencers. I guess I'm not familiar with that particular term. What do you mean by an influencer?
Influencer goes back to the stat of who makes the income decision.
Okay.
So if you think about it, if you target the women, they're buying for the dad, they're buying for the significant other, they're buying for themselves, and they're buying for the kids. So there's a trifecta of why you want to approach them beyond their own needs. And the four major findings, Bills Nation out there, that we found is: one, women want healthier foods, gluten-free, salads, fresh foods. Two, women want a variety of apparel options. V-necks, you know, you can't just shrink it and pink it. Three, they want an environment that's healthy for their kids. That was the ideology that a woman, going back to major finding two, is, you know, a guy's small or medium was a woman's shirt.
Yeah.
So we have to move away from that. And then a really interesting finding under hygiene, I'll put it, is we found that the bathrooms weren't clean, and it actually led to a partnership between a hand sanitizer company and a couple of the teams, College and Pro, that I've been helping with this, all because research and analytics drove innovation and new business development.
Wow. All right, let's break down some of these things. You started with the food and beverage, and your survey showed that I don't know what this means either. Fun. 34% of the women surveyed mentioned fun as the reason that what would influence their decision in food and beverage. What do they mean by that?
Sure. What they meant, when they go there, they want to have a good time. And I know from doing some of the one-on-one interviews, John, that they would like healthier foods, but they know that when you go to a game, that's going to be a time that we all, hey, we're going to eat that fried food. We're going to have less than what our normal healthier routine might be. So they just want to have fun. So for me, how I interpret it from the data and from talking to the women is, yeah, that means they're going to have fun and eat and be less conscious of their calories.
Got it. Apparel. I love your phrase, shrink it and pink it, doesn't work anymore. Women are looking for specific women's clothing with NFL-branded logos on them, et cetera?
Sure. One of my close friends, she graduated from the University of Florida. She's a Gator fan. She's early 30s. And she really anecdotally just opened my eyes watching her at Gator games and what she wears, and she actually helped me understand, if you observe women at any athletic event, high school, college, or pro, semi-pro, all the fans can go out and do this experiment, you're going to see a group of women, they won't have jerseys, they might not have the big numbers on the chest, but what they will have is the subtle colors of that team. So I guarantee you at the Bills games, there's women that wear blouses that are the Bills colors, but they won't have Bills anywhere on it. And that's something that the teams and outfitters need to direct their attention more. Women want to be able to have that color and wear it to the dinner, to the club afterwards.
Interesting. Your findings on restrooms and cleanliness, I have to say, that can't be just limited to women. I mean, who wouldn't want cleaner restrooms, right? Male, female, right?
Yeah, there is. And, you know, John, we're on the air. I won't get into it too in-depth, but there are realities of porta potties that are not clean enough. Yeah. I would say guys are a little bit more flexible.
Okay.
Is the best way to say it. The women, I've had women tell me they'll hold it rather than go to a nasty bathroom.
Yeah.
And for me, John, I want to say this to every female fan and male fan out there. We can't have events in the 21st century where women are saying they won't use the bathroom because it's not clean enough.
Yeah. You had some interesting findings, I thought, on tailgating, the tailgating experience. And this is a big tailgate part here in Orchard Park, New York. And the tailgating experience for women, that speaks to them as well, right?
Yes. I think overall it speaks to them. I think it's, you know, we've evolved from Title IX. Women are growing up not just co-viewers. Yeah, the dads have influenced them. But, hey, we have flag football. We have tackle football for women. And women are just passionate fans. it's really a nuanced deal because you got to pay attention to Bridget Brennan's quote in the book, Why She Buys. She says, women are females first and consumers second. So what that means is you got to pay attention to how they might consume in this environment and how they might influence others for their purchasing habits. But at the same time, they're just fans. So it's a real sweet spot that you can't put them in a box that they're a woman fan, but at the same time, you can't ignore that they're a fan that's a woman.
Yeah, in the report, Dr. Harrison, you told a story of how, I guess it kind of surprised you, you had an encounter with a woman who talked about buying Madden. I mean, talk about an influencer. She was a purchaser, right? Tell that story for us.
Absolutely. Yes, EA Sports launched the 25th anniversary of the Madden event, and there weren't really many women at the game. Only 18% of gamers are women, 82% are men. And I just started talking to this particular woman. She had three of her sons with her there for the launch of the Madden game. And she says, yeah, you know, I'm going to make the decision of if they get Madden or not. And it was just powerful because women were not targeted for that event. It was all high school males that were going to sprint and take a picture with Barry Sanders afterwards.
Hey, Dr. Harrison, tell me about the decision to go to an NFL game. Your survey is conducted among women who are at the game. But do women in the population, are they the ones who buy the tickets, say, hey, we're going to the Bills game against the Jets this Sunday?
Great question. And I actually, Bills Nation out there, I hope to get out to your event, one event, so I can learn the specific nuances. I mean, we can only generalize so much from team to team.
Right.
But, yes, women are making the purchases, particularly online, if they're bought in that capacity. If they are season ticket holders, it varies more. We have, you know, we have research that speaks to that from other studies. But what you're saying, we need more research on, because I think that varies from household to household.
Your number said what? About 22% of women indicated that they go to games with their husbands, right?
Absolutely, yep, just under 25%.
And I thought this number was interesting. 21% of participants, women participants, did not feel valued with respect to their game day experiences. That's a fifth of the NFL audience in game who don't like their game day experience, or don't feel like they're appreciated, I guess.
Yeah, and we need to do much better with that. Some of that dealt with, John, the objectification. I mean, we know, I mean, they're going to be cheerleaders, they're going to be scantily clad, and, you know, some of those things, I mean, there's female calendars. I just think some of the women are questioning, based on the data, the way I interpret it, they're questioning the cultural message of the event.
Yeah, what about that? Did you deal with that at all, Dr. Harrison? That's a valid complaint, I would think.
Yeah, well, with that is, it historically has been a male-dominated sport. I mean, you know, we've assumed that, I mean, think about it. We've just shifted in the last few years. I think everyone out there remembers the commercials where you wake up on a Saturday, the wife comes downstairs, and the guy, you know, her husband or partner is mad. He's got to turn the channel from ESPN. Well, now I would argue half the people out there, are a significant amount, the guy might wake up, come downstairs, and this woman already has on the game. And yeah, she's saying, hey, what are we going to eat and snack on and drink while we watch the NFL or college football?
Yeah.
That's where we've evolved.
Dr. Harrison, your survey dealt with in-stadium attendance. What, if anything, do we know about, you know, the other NFL fans, those watching on TV, following during the offseason, et cetera?
Let everyone know, and it'll be dictated when Troy is ready, Vincent is ready to release it, because we have a series of studies in the hopper and the queue, is we collected data during the AFC and NFC championships of the AFC NFC championships at Buffalo Wild Wings here in Orlando. And we're going through those data right now. Very interesting to see who's coming to Buffalo Wild Wings. There was a whole section of women in line going out the door who had jerseys on of the teams in the championships who said, hey, I just come here to order and then take it back home. So we don't know a lot about women's viewing habits, particularly, as you just brought up, away from the game. That's a whole other area I'm just getting into.
In your remarks, the executive summary of the report, Dr. Harrison, you talk about how this study that you've completed and submitted is a foundational report for future investigation. What do you think the NFL has in mind?
I think looking at how women view games at pubs, I think how women view games in households, I think, you know, we always talk about the man cave. Well, what about the woman cave and the women that are building content and that are building up their rituals of how they consume the NFL? And we need to look at other locations. I mean, I need to visit Buffalo. I need to visit, I did visit the San Diego Chargers, but I just observed that day. You know, I need to make my way to all the NFL teams, all 32, to really, you know, just have more, even more concrete evidence. But we found out a lot, and reports being well received.
Was there any one thing that surprised you the most?
Yes, it's that the assumption. I had a hunch when people say, "Why is the women's bathroom more crowded?" I think most people would guess it's because of a lack of stalls, but it wasn't. It was a lack of mirrors. And what I think that speaks to, John, is we don't know things about women and how they consume and influence and experience sport because we haven't asked them.
Well, that's what the survey is all about. We should mention, Dr. Harrison, that your report is available to anyone, right, on the website, NFLPlayerEngagement.com.
Yes, sir.
Anybody can read this if they want to, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we have another one out. Women's knowledge of the game is something in the hopper. And we have data on women of color, Latinos, and African Americans, and we're just going to keep it going across all the different sports, from golf to Ultimate Fighting Championship to hockey, NBA D League. We have some of that data, and I'm learning a lot as a former college football player that played center. Never thought I'd be researching women that love football.
Yeah, well, it's good stuff, Dr. Harrison. Thank you very much for doing the work, and thank you very much for coming on the show tonight and talking with us about it. We may have to get back in touch with you as you continue to go through these reports.
I look forward to finally making it up to Bills land. Thank y'all so much.
Come up to a game, absolutely. That's Dr. C. Keith Harrison. He is an associate professor at the University of Central Florida, and he is the principal investigator and lead researcher for this report, examining the NFL game day experiences of female spectators. You can read it, too. It's at NFLPlayerEngagement.com. NFLPlayerEngagement.com. Interesting stuff. We'll take a break. Come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Interesting stuff from Dr. C. Keith Harrison, who is the lead investigator and researcher for that study on women fans at NFL games, examining the game day experience of female spectators. You can look at it. As I said, go to NFLPlayerEngagement.com. It's down around the right side. You'll see reports and surveys over there. I found it interesting. 51%. Seems like a lot, but if he says so, 51% of the fans and at any given NFL game are females. It seems like a lot. I mean, I'm thinking about the experience I have, and I don't really get a chance to examine the crowd closely, but here at Ralph Wilson Stadium or on the road at the venues where we're close to the crowd, Foxborough, for example, I would have guessed it'd be like 60, 65% male. Jay Harris, producer, you've been at a lot of NFL games. You think every other fan in an NFL game is a female? I mean,
I would have never have guessed
that.
Wouldn't have guessed that. But like I just said, they were watching the NFL Network. They just did a pan shot, and it was at a Bills game, and they showed the first two rows, and it was probably split.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprised
absolutely.
By that.
Yes.
And no wonder they do the research. They do a study like this because that's half the audience, I guess. So it'll be interesting to see where that takes them, especially interested in seeing what the TV ratings look like. That might be even actually easier to get as far as a measurement of TV ratings and the gender breakdown there. Interesting stuff. Again, our thanks to Dr. C. Keith Harrison for joining us tonight to talk about a study. It's been an interesting show, kind of offbeat. Nathan Frederick, his book Draft Day, sort of an overview of the NFL draft and the characters involved, and the comedian Jim Florentine. We need to do these offbeat shows once in a while. Keeps us on top of our game. More conventional show probably tomorrow night with Dan Shaka from Our Lad's Guide to the NFL Draft to talk about the draft in 3 weeks. And Brandon Kaufman, Bill's receiver, will join us tomorrow night as well. So make sure you tune into that. A little more conventional than tonight, but I kind of like going off the beaten path with our show tonight. Thanks for tuning in. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO. Family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight is Mike Jafari, our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills Director of Broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. See you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.